you think Seth Shostak, I kind of like to think that he's the new Phil Klass of this generation.
No, he doesn't know enough about UFOs to be the new Phil Klass. He's got competition for that, but he certainly is trying to be a spokesman for SETI.
Well,
but he's got a good sense of humor. He lectures all over the place trying to help raise money. These guys need a high profile. He, Jill Tarter, Frank Drake. If I was to be suspicious about somebody, it'd probably be Drake, because Drake was in the military between college and graduate school and worked on electronic countermeasures. And you need a high-level clearance to do that in the Navy.
Yeah.
And he stayed in the reserve for at least 10 years, and he was closely connected with Dr. Donald Menzel at Harvard, who I found out, to my total surprise, was up to his ears in classified work. Nobody knew that, and I certainly didn't when I found it out. More than 30 years with the NSA, National Security Agency, as of 1960, classified work for the CIA, for 30 other companies. I discovered this at Harvard, took permission from three people for me to look at his papers. So there was a close connection between those two, and so you wonder, what was Drake doing during the summers? They like highly educated, talented people, and he certainly fills that bill. To do classified work in the summers when they're not teaching.
Yeah.
Now, some people have suggested Carl Sagan was also in on things. I don't know. Carl and I were classmates for 3 years at the University of Chicago when I last visited him at his home in the 90s in Ithaca, New York. We agreed that if he did have a clearance to have classified information about this, he couldn't talk about it anyway. Well, I respect that. I worked under security for 14 years. And so, I can't make jokes about that. But it's still in my gray basket. I don't know whether he was on the inside. He certainly said some stupid things about UFOs. On the other hand, he did more than any other individual that I can think of to get people interested in extraterrestrial intelligence. And that's a good thing. Now, there's a chapter in my book, Top Secret Magic, where I point out all the silly things he says in demon-haunted world about UFOs. Was he just doing a job? And I'm still waiting to find out whether Klass, who died not very long ago, was hooked up. I've had two people tell me that they saw him in classified facilities where you had to have a clearance to be present.
Oh, really?
And, I don't know whether that's true or not, but I filed some Freedom of Information Act requests, and I'm waiting. That sometimes can take a while, and if there's anybody out there who's doing the same thing, my email address is at my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. It's FS as in flying saucer, PHYS as in physicist, at Rogers, Rogers.com. Flying saucer physicist at Rogers.com.
Okay, one big question I really want to ask you is, I've spoken to Greg Bishop. He wrote Project Beta.
Yeah.
And a lot of that book deals with Bill Moore, and Bill Moore's sort of being rediscovered, at least he's being firstly discovered by me, but sort of rediscovered by ufology. And you did a lot of research with Bill.
We worked very closely together for several years. Yeah.
How in tune were you to what he was up to with the government, and overall, what do you think of that whole, his whole saga as a ufologist, and how he ended up leaving the field?
It's a very mixed bag. Bill was a kind of strange guy. He was kind of paranoid about people. He liked playing games. He was a union negotiator for a teacher's union up in Minnesota, and, you run it up the flagpole and see who salutes kind of thing. And he was a very hard worker. He did a lot of research. He dug out all kinds of stuff. He would go to archives. We went to some together. He would go to, places to get records of people and stuff. I knew he was in touch with insiders after he started promoting the first book, The Roswell Incident.
Yeah.
And he would call me. We would meet in various places at conferences and so forth. And he could drive me up the wall, but I introduced him to Jamie Chandray, and it was Jamie who received a roll of film with the Eisenhower briefing document, the first of the MJ-12 documents, and they called me the same day after Bill processed the film. And I met with them less than a month later in California, and looked at the documents. We kept in very close touch with each other and wrote papers for MUFON conferences. He was playing games with the guys on the inside, and I was very upset when in Las Vegas, it was either 88 or 89, I guess, he gave a paper. He was supposed to send me an advance copy, and normally I've spoken at more MUFON conferences than anybody, and this was a MUFON conference. You have to submit a paper. Well, Bill didn't do that, and he was supposed to let me know what he was going to say in advance because I was going to be there and giving a paper myself. And I got it just a couple of days in advance, and I told him, Bill, you should have started at the bottom of page 5. He wanted to emphasize disinformation, and I said people want information. And he didn't even stay at the conference hotel. He was playing it independently. Didn't take questions. He talked much longer than he was supposed to. It was kind of a fiasco. I wanted to crawl through the floor. He asked his own questions, see. Yeah. And I was to meet him for lunch, and I told him, you know, you screwed up the program, but good. And his feeling was good. And so he admitted his involvement with Richard Doty versus Paul Benowitz.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can understand it. It was a quid pro quo thing. And I'd heard long before that that Benowitz was a little bit off the wall anyway with what he was doing. So I didn't approve of a lot of that. And then Bill and Jamie were raising money to do a movie and a book, and neither thing ever happened. They did go to Washington after I found out that certain documents were being declassified, or there was a classification review of certain Air Force files, and that's where they found the Cutler Twining memo, and Bill called me the same day, that night, to read what they had found and so forth. So I certainly feel that he made a tremendous contribution to ufology. He was kind of off the wall in some ways, and he did do this game playing. He flashed a MUFON membership card to a guy, Lee Graham, and said it was his Air Force intelligence officer ID kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was par for the course for Bill. Frankly, he was always late, and that drove me up the wall, frankly, you know. So, you know, I haven't talked to him in years. We had a big argument the last time we got together, and I know he's talked to, there's some quotes from him. There's a movie that was made by a Canadian producer, Kimball, my goodness, in Red Star Films down in Nova Scotia. The movie is Stanton T. Friedman Is Real.
It's
played on Canadian television.
Yep.
Paul Kimball. And he was in touch with Bill, who indicated he certainly didn't think I'd fake the documents. It was either in that movie or in the other one, Do You Believe in Magic, which is another movie made by Paul. It's around the Space Channel in Canada. They're listed on my website, too, for anybody who's wondering what the heck is he talking about. And Bill did not say bad things about me, and I heard an interview that he did on the radio with somebody. I guess it was Greg Bishop. And he sounded pretty rational to me. So there are not a lot of people that have come and gone in ufology. I don't know why I've stayed the course this long. I mean, my first lecture was 1967, for goodness sakes, which makes me feel pretty ancient. But I guess it's because I feel I bring to bear certain special aspects of my background that nobody else embodies in one person. That's just the way things are. I'm a nuclear physicist. I worked on far-out propulsion systems. I can deal with the you-can't-get-here-from-there kind of arguments, none of which stand up. Second, I worked under security for 14 years, so those people say you can't keep secrets don't know what they're talking about. I've been to 20 archives. I've written classified documents. I understand how security works. And this has to do with MJ-12 documents as well as anything else. So, just a fact to indicate that the government, three facts, that the government can keep secrets. The Eisenhower Library still has 300,000 pages of classified material. He went out of office in 1961. Secondly, the National Reconnaissance Office announced just a couple months ago the Poppy satellite had been launched by them. In 1962 to 1971, this was the first public mention of it. And it was what it was for, incidentally, was to keep track of electronic emissions from Soviet ships. And the third thing is, in 1995, the Naval Research Lab announced that it had established the first electronic intelligence satellite, the Corona satellite, like the cigar or the old Toyota Corona or whatever. It was in 1960, first public word, 1995.
Oh, wow.
And don't tell me your techniques haven't changed since then, because they certainly have.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the first 12 were failures, mind you.
Oh, boy.
And they were all covered up under the guise of a scientific satellite program. Incidentally, the first Corona spy satellite got more electronic intelligence information about the Soviet Union. It's in 1960. Than all of the U-2 flights that had preceded it.
Wow.
That's why they wanted it up there, because they knew that from space, you know, you can get a lot of information, just go round and round. Well, you know, it's a little hard to do the flights too often and stuff. And as we found out, they can be shot down. And, you know, there's a good example. The Russians knew we were flying U-2s over the Soviet Union, and they protested in secret to the United States. The United States government obviously knew we were flying spy satellites over the spy airplanes over the Soviet Union. That was illegal, violating somebody else's airspace. Neither country said anything, not because they liked each other, but the Russians certainly didn't want to admit this because they'd have to say they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So, of course, they kept it secret until they had. Remember, we were still lying when they got Gary Powers and his airplane and his camera. You know, he was supposed to take a poison pill and die so that nobody would know what was going on. Well, he didn't. But what I'm getting at here is there are times when different countries have the same goals. You don't need to be a conspiracy. They don't meet together and say, well, I won't say anything if you don't.
Yeah.
And as another example of that, and there's a reason for giving this one, in 2001, the U.S. government sponsored a get-together near Washington of the families of 166 United States military people who'd been in reconnaissance planes that had been shot down near the Soviet Union and Korea and China without one word appearing in public. And this was back in the 50s, late 40s, early 50s, mostly. 166 crewmen. And people say they can't keep secrets?
Yeah.
And I mention this incidentally because I've been working on, well, with Frank Fascino Jr., author of the Braxton County monster, cover up of the Flatwoods monster revealed. This is a case that happened in September 12, 1952, which everybody knows was the biggest year for UFOs in Project Blue Book history, at least more sightings reported anyway, that we're aware of. And I wrote the foreword and epilogue, and there's a new edition going to be coming out, but some people objected to the first edition on the basis that we talked, or Frank talks about, dogfights between jets and, I mean, our military interceptors, to be more precise, and UFOs. That didn't happen. That's all malarkey. What are you talking about? Well, I'd also mentioned that I had, at that time, heard six different stories of more planes going up than came back down, going up to chase UFOs. Well, when people were giving us a hard time, we started looking, getting clippings from other people, checking things out. And as it turns out, there were loads of reports of dogfights. And as a matter of fact, what we found, much to my surprise, and I've been interested since 1958, was that there were orders given to military pilots to shoot down UFOs if they didn't land when instructed to do so. You can think of all the cartoons that might go with that. But in addition, General Roger Ramey, who was also connected with the Roswell event in 1947, he was only a brigadier general then. He obviously didn't displease anybody. By now, he was a major general. Stated publicly, he's quoted in a newspaper, "We have scrambled interceptors hundreds of times to chase UFOs."
Well,
hundreds of times. He didn't say several, some, a few, hundreds of times. That goes along with the notion that we're supposed to shoot them down. Now, what Frank Fascino and I found, and this will be in the new edition of the book, is that there were an awful lot of accidents to military planes in 1952. There were three pilots who each had over 100 missions in Korea, where MiGs were flying around too.
Yeah.
Came back and crashed. Huh. And some of the crash stories talk about the plane was disintegrated. Another one, the planes disappeared. Whew. Now, that's kind of scary stuff.
Yeah, I'll say.
And for people who say, oh, we couldn't keep that secret, I point to these 166 airmen who died in secret without their families knowing what had happened. Some of them, incidentally, became prisoners of war and were probably tortured and so forth. But their families didn't know what had happened to them. So there's a larger picture here, in other words, of things going on that we don't hear much about and where the press hasn't done its job.
Yeah.
That's very unfortunate.
Moving on to the MJ-12 documents. Now, I've noticed, I do a lot of looking at Grant Cameron's website, and he sort of like keeps track of a lot of these documents that are coming out now. And there seems to be a concerted effort to flood the field with new documents in the last, like, 10 years or so. What do you think of that?
Well, in my additional chapter in Top Secret Magic, I deal with a whole bunch of documents that Tim Cooper received in his post office box in California, and somebody knocking at his door, and so forth. MJ-12 documents.
Yeah.
And I'd been in touch with Tim for some time, so I got copies of these things. And other people have picked up on them. And what I found, I got a research grant from the Fund for UFO Research to do some follow-up. And as I point out in this extra chapter to Top Secret Magic, and in my paper, Roswell and the MJ-12 Documents in the New Millennium, a MUFON paper from the year 2000, of course, a number of these documents are clearly fraudulent. I found they're what I call emulations.
Yeah.
That is, you take an original document and you retype it with a few selective changes, and you scan or Xerox, most likely scan, the handwritten portions of the document, combine these, and you got a great-looking document with a genuine signature.
Yeah.
But I found the originals, you see.
Yeah.
Because I go to archives and I check on things, and I don't believe anybody. I also found in a whole bunch more of these, there were seven that were clearly emulations, and I've showed these to lots of people, the original and the emulation, and they all agree once they look at them, you know, side by side, that, and they all have mistakes in them. You know, it's kind of crazy if you look carefully at them. And I found mistakes in a bunch of the other documents. So it's standard intelligence organization practice. If good stuff gets out, you flood the market with garbage.
Yeah.
And people find the garbage and say, well, if this is phony, then that is phony. That's false reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the kind of reasoning that says, since most sightings can be explained, all can be. Since most people aren't 7 feet tall, nobody is. Since most drugs don't cure diseases, they kill people, none do. You know, totally false reasoning, but it sounds good. And so, I just finished the book Exempt from Disclosure by Robert Collins and Richard Doty. And Doty was the one who got Bill Moore involved with Paul Benowitz and so forth.
Yeah.
And I find documents in there that are phony that they accept as real.
Oh, really?
And I don't know who made these. And some people insist, well, if you can't tell me who created them and why, then I'll believe that they're genuine. And look, I tell people, I'm a dumb old physicist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't understand a lot of things. The serial killers, for one.
Yeah.
I don't understand priests who attack choir boys sexually. I don't understand grown men who attack four-year-old girls sexually. This doesn't make any sense to me. And yet it happens. Like it or not, it happens. So I don't know why people make phony documents to get attention, to distract the researchers. But I'm satisfied, as I point out in the book, Top Secret Magic, final chapter. They call it an afterword. It's 4,995 afterwards. But as I point out in there, I'm satisfied that the Eisenhower briefing document, the Cutler-Twining memo, the Truman-Forrestal memo, and probably the Special Operating Manual 1.01 are genuine. The rest, at best in my gray basket, some of them definitely in my No Way Jose basket. So the thing is, you got to take each document on its own merits or lack thereof, and you have to take each argument that way. I mean, there are people saying, let me give a for instance, the Cutler-Twining memo, which is the only original document here. That is, it's an original carbon on onion skin paper. That's what they used to use when people used carbon and there were no Xerox machines.
Yeah.
It was found in the National Archives in a box that it certainly didn't belong in, where it was undoubtedly planted, if you will. And that box was first handled after the death, 2 weeks after the death of the last survivor of MJ-12. Anyway, all kinds of objections have been raised about that. The typeface is wrong, said Phil Klass. And he paid me $1,000 for proving him wrong about that one.
Mm-hmm.
The security marking, top secret restricted. Well, nobody used that. The government says nobody used that. Well, as it turns out, the General Accounting Office was looking for Roswell materials for Congressman Steve Schiff back in the 90s. And in the facility that they visited, they had clearances up through everything for them, and the material was up through top secret. They didn't find anything about Roswell, which was their goal, but they noted on page 80 of a 400-page report that they had written about their activities, we found several instances of the use of top secret restricted, even though we had been told, for Majestic 12 in parentheses, that it was not in use at that time. So I called them and said, hey, I need copies of those. Man, the stuff's still classified. You can't get copies of that. But they're saying so is good enough for me. There were a whole bunch of other things about that document and all the others where if you do your digging, if you do your homework,
yeah.
If you say, you know, how did anybody know that this was true when we didn't have that information until long after we got the documents, then things begin to look good for those original documents. And so anything new, I'd say I am very wary, put it in my gray basket, but don't buy into it. And that's one of the things I find with this exempt from disclosure. They bought everything.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that. I'm sorry.
Or maybe they're selling everything. You know, they're trying to put it out.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm unhappy with the book. It doesn't have an index. It needed an editor, a lot of misspellings and some factual misstatements and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were lying, which is really quite a different kind of question.
Yeah.
I'm saying they've repeated rumors and half-truths and so forth, and the reader has no way to determine whether they're true or not.
Okay, now, like I told you earlier, I just got into this the last 3 or 4 years. I'm only 25 years old. And like I said in the introduction, you're a living legend in the UFO field. So what advice do you have for the next generation of ufologists and for future ufologists who are coming down the pike now?
I'd say be skeptical about everything. Do your homework. There's an enormous amount of information out there. There are 5 large-scale scientific studies that I discuss. My book, Top Secret Magic, is a 10-page bibliography of good stuff. It also lists the skeptical books, too, because you have to know your enemy, so to speak. Join MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. Get their monthly newsletter. Be wary of everything you look at. I can probably, if I work hard at it, find a half a dozen people whose word I would take about anything. John Schussler of MUFON and Dr. Bruce Maccabee, Rob Swiatek, I'm a big fan of Bud Hopkins. There's an awful lot of people that I say you've got to check everything. So if you're interested, recognize the fact that if these things are real, it's the biggest story of the millennium. I mean, my four major conclusions are that, one, the evidence is overwhelming that planets being visited by intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft. In other words, some, underlined 27 times, some UFOs are really in the spacecraft. Two, the subject represents a kind of cosmic Watergate. That does not mean that everybody in the government knows what's going on. That's not how you keep secrets. The need-to-know concept is very important. Washington government takes advantage of all those big egos in Washington. Well, if this was going on, I would know about it because I know everything. That's all I can say to that. The third conclusion is none of the arguments made against the first two by the nasty, noisy negativists stand up under careful scrutiny. And finally, four, we're dealing with the biggest story of the millennium. Visits to planet Earth by alien spacecraft, successful cover-up of the best data, bodies and wreckage, for, what is it, 58 years now. So it's a big story. It's not a little story. You're not going to find out all about it in 2 weeks at your computer. I'm constantly getting questions from people who have read some of the anti-literature and who don't know that those questions have already been answered.
Yeah.
About the MJ-12 documents. I've had half a dozen questions in the last 4 days. And I say, read my book. I deal with that. I deal with that one. I deal with that one. What do you want? I can't repeat all this stuff. Read the book.
Exactly, yeah. All right, well, tell us where we can get the book. It's available. Is it available in bookstores, too?
Generally speaking, it's available in bookstores, you know, in the Barnes & Nobles and probably Amazon.com and all that. Or they can send me a check for $17 at Stanton Friedman, Post Office Box 958, Houlton, H-O-U-L-T-O-N, Maine, M-E, 04730-0958. Or they can go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com, and I have PayPal now. I'm getting modern. I'm getting modern. I still use slides at my lectures, but PayPal is a help for a lot of people, and so it makes it easier.
Yeah.
My website lists videos and a CD-ROM and my two-volume DVD, no less. How much more modern can you get?
Wow,
my
nice.
Saucers are real. Wow. And if they buy books from me, of course, they get them. They're all autographed by me.
Awesome. And what can we expect from you in 2006?
Well, that's a good question. I've done a whole bunch of television interviews that haven't aired yet, so I'm looking forward to some of them. And I've got a proposal at a book publisher for Flying Saucers and Science, a new book. I'm anxious to hear back from that. And so, you know, more of the same. I'll still be doing more lectures. I'll be at the Aztec New Mexico Conference on March 24th, 25th, 26th. I'll be in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, near Harrisburg, actually, on May the 5th, sort of a Ghostbusters conference, which will have some UFO stuff.
Oh, cool.
And check out MUFON. I was there, and I'll be in Roswell in July, because there's always something exciting happening there.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Stan, for sitting down and talking to me for so long. This has been just a real thrill for me, and I think someday when I got grandkids, I'm going to play the interview for them and say, yeah, I knew Stan Friedman. Are you kidding me? Here, listen. And, you know, I really, as a person who just got into ufology and as someone who's just got a lot of respect for the field, I want to thank you for your hard work and what you've done for the field. I'm sure a lot of people thank you, but, you know, I want to also go on record and thank you for everything you've done for ufology. You've just been one of the greatest spokesmen the field have ever had, so thank you for that, and thank you for appearing on Banal of America Audio. It's hugely appreciated.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio Season 1. I want to thank Stanton Friedman for sitting down and talking to us. I want to thank Leslie and Chiron of banalofamerica.com for your continued help and support with the audio series. Hope you guys have a very Merry Christmas. And, of course, I want to thank all you great listeners out there who have found Banal of America Audio, who have become listeners, who have stuck with us through the last few months. I want to wish everybody out there listening a very Merry Christmas. I hope you have an awesome holiday. Be safe. Spend time with your family. I hope you get what you want for Christmas, and I just hope you have a fantastic time. Next week, we will have either a new guest or a special clip show type dealio. I'll have more information about that next week at some point. So, this is Tim Benall wishing you a very Merry Christmas and signing off.